Coming clean on late payments to subcontractors and privacy training for contractor employees. Those are two rules on procurement issued at the last minute by the Obama administration. Presuming they're still effective, what do they do? Well, for some answers, we turn to procurement attorney Joe Petrillo of Petrillo & Powell. Joe, as always, good to have you on.
Good to be here, Tom.
So the first question is, they were issued at the last minute. A lot of stuff was undone by the Trump administration. Are these rules, in fact, in effect?
Yes, they haven't been changed yet. There's been no change to these particular rules. There were about 10 different regulations that were rolled out since the middle of December, and many of them, like these two, are effective January 19. In one case, the Small Business Payment Regulation, this regulation implements a statute. So I don't think it's going to be removed. It can't be removed, but it could be changed somewhat by the new administration. Interestingly, this thing's been kicking around a long time. The statute was an authorization act in 2010. The Small Business Administration implemented it in 2013, and now the FAR Council is finally getting around to issuing a final regulation implementing the requirement.
Tell us about what it does then.
Well, it's going to apply to all contracts where there is a small business subcontracting plan. Those are contracts held by a large business which are over $700,000 for supply or service, or $1.5 million for construction. It adds a new clause, payments to small business subcontractors, so the requirements will apply as contracts are awarded with the new clause or amended to include the new clause. This is a new requirement, and it has to do with paying small business subcontractors, first-tier subcontractors only. When a contractor makes a late or reduced payments to subcontractors, it has to self-report to the contracting officer. That's what he's doing. An untimely payment, which is important to understand, isn't defined as something that doesn't happen on the day it's supposed to. It's a payment that's 90 days later than that. So if you have a 30-day payment schedule in the subcontract after the submission of an invoice, a late payment would be one that takes place later than 120 days from that initial invoice submission. When you have either a reduced payment or an untimely payment, then the contractor has to notify the contracting officer within 14 days and give the reasons for why it's not paying or why it's paying late. And the contracting officer has to determine if the contractor is justified in making a reduced or late payment.
Because a lot of prime contractors routinely hold on to invoices from subs for 90 days, even though the subcontractor might have submitted a bill that says, whatever it is, net 35% if paid in 10 days, that kind of thing. But the big companies often sit on them for 90 days just to play the float.
Well, you could sit on them for 90 days under this regulation, but if you go past that 90-day mark, you're going to have to report the late payment. Interestingly, there are examples in the regulation of when the contractor is justified making a reduced or late payment. And one of those is where there's a dispute, about how much money the subcontractor is due under the subcontract, so long as the prime contractor pays on the amounts not in dispute. If the prime contractor has overpaid the subcontractor, it can reduce a subsequent invoice to recoup that overpayment. There's a recognition that there might be a mistake, an administrative mistake, and that's okay. Or if the subcontractor is late in performing, and therefore the contractor punishes it by making a late payment. So we've got those instances about justified payments, and we have instances where we may have other examples, but contractors are certainly going to want to provide an excuse because there is a consequence for doing this.
Yeah, my question was next, what happens if you are late and you tell the contracting officer, I didn't pay these people on time?
Well, if the contracting officer decides that you are not justified, the prime contractor is not justified, and there are three or more unjustified payments under a single prime contract within a 12-month period, then the contracting officer has to report that in the past performance database, CPARS, in the module of that past performance database for federal award performance and integrity information. And so that's the system where this thing shows up, and it would factor into past performance evaluations on future contract competitions. So it would be a stain on the contractor's record.
So look in the column marked deadbeat.
Something like that.
Okay. Yeah. We're speaking with procurement attorney Joe Petrillo of Petrillo and Powell. And the second rule that you mentioned that became effective on the 19th is a requirement to implement privacy training for contractors and employees and so on. Tell us about that one.
Well, this, the Privacy Act has been around since the mid-70s, and training for the Privacy Act is something I think that contractors dealing with Privacy Act information have been doing on a regular basis anyway, but they decided to make it a requirement, and there's a new clause, again, starting in January 19, is going to be added to solicitations, requiring contractors and subcontractors who handle Privacy Act material, this is personally identifiable information, information about people, and they have to train their employees on their responsibilities under the Act and the contract. And there are some specific topics that are listed in the clause. What are the provisions of the Privacy Act? What are the penalties for violating it? How do you handle and safeguard personally identifiable information? What are the appropriate uses of such information, and when can't you use it? How can't you use it? And what happens if there's a suspected or confirmed breach or an unauthorized disclosure or access of that information?
Is this a rule attempting to update privacy procedures and training in light of how much cyber activity goes on, where people have been losing personally identifiable information in cyber attacks?
Well, I think that's certainly one of the motivations for this rule. Again, as I've mentioned, the Privacy Act has been around for a long time, but we've had some, and it's not just recently, we've had over a number of years, some significant breaches of personal information in both the private and public sectors.
Now, is this particular rule have a statutory basis? Was there some defense authorization provision requiring this one, or is this something that the administration just did?
There's no requirement in statute that there be such a rule or regulation. So if you're trying to eliminate 75% of all regulations, this one's on the chopping block. On the other hand, it's a very good idea, and probably most contractors were doing this anyway. So I'm not sure what is accomplished by getting rid of it.
I was going to say that in most companies nowadays where you're handling this type of information, your personnel policies would already have training in place for privacy.
Well, that's right. And if we think about the government contract context, if a company is handling this type of information under a contract and there is a breach or there is a problem of some kind, and the government starts to investigate the contractor and how the breach occurred, and the government's looking at whether the contractor is, for example, responsible, whether it's the kind of contractor the government should be doing business with. It certainly helps if you've got a policy in place and a training program in place, and you're doing everything you can to prevent these breaches before that happens.
Joseph Petrillo is a procurement attorney with Petrillo and Powell. As always, thanks so much.
Thank you.
We'll post a link to this interview at federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive.